I'm Marty Moscoe, and welcome to Radio Times. Big box stores are dominating the retail landscape, and that's certainly true for musical instruments and equipment, selling mass-produced products made by a small number of manufacturers. It used to be a challenge finding those boutique and mom-and-pop music stores, but there are more people who are bucking this trend. Today, meet three local entrepreneurs who started their own businesses that specialize in musical equipment with an attention to detail and with a homemade touch. Let me introduce them to you. Chris DePinto began designing guitars about 30 years ago. He's the owner of a music-based instrument shop, DePinto Guitars, in the Fishtown section of Philadelphia. And Chris, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Yeah, thank you, Marty.
Also with us is Matt Manheyer. He builds and modifies electric guitar amplifiers, is the owner of Root Beer Audio, also in Fishtown. He teaches at the University of the Arts and the Art Institute. Matt, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as
Thank
well.
You.
And also with us is Ryan Ratajski. He's a co-founder and owner of Fuzzerocious Pedals, manufacturing guitar pedals with his family in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. And Ryan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you. Thank you.
I sure wish our audience could have seen the mayhem that was in this room about a minute ago, because everyone has brought some show and tell for us. Which we will be doing a little bit later on in the show. Do you think, Chris, the three of you kind of represent either a new trend or kind of a trend within the music world?
Oh, yeah, I think so, yeah. Especially back when I started back in 95, there wasn't much of this going on. And, you know, making your own thing, making it different is a big – I think it's a big thing today, especially in the pedal market. You're seeing a lot of that. And in the amp and guitar market a little more as well. Yeah.
Is it kind of like, Ryan, kind of like, you know, vinyl records have come back? It's what's old is new?
Yeah.
Or is it something more than that?
It's a resurgence. I mean, you go back and you look at the Hendrix and, you know, everything that came about with guitar pedals and things like that and fuzz and those types of things. And then it kind of goes away and we get back to more the classical thing. And then we come back and we're back into, you know, doing
cool
things,
stuff.
Cool stuff, things by hand, yeah.
Exactly, things by hand. So, I'm curious about, Matt, how you see what you're doing.
How I see what I'm doing? Well, I guess I see firsthand the repair side of things. And like you said, the big box stores. At the University of the Arts, I repair all of, like, the music gear there, aside from teaching there. And it's mostly like modern big box equivalent technology. And most of it's just built. It's like not sustainable. It breaks after a few plays or a year or something. So I guess I see they're updating those things to stand the test of time or trying to build stuff that'll, you know, withstand 50 years or so.
50 years or so. And are you all musicians? I certainly know you
Sure.
Chris, because
Yeah.
you were just playing a couple of minutes ago. You're all musicians.
Air quotes. Yeah.
Air quotes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I enjoy to play, yeah.
But is part of what you have created part of your frustration as a musician, Ryan, for instance?
Sure.
Were you looking to do something?
Yeah. I mean, just getting into it, I wasn't aware of guitar pedals when I first started. I was just playing bass.
Right.
So then getting into it afterwards, it became an obsession. And I just wanted to make something cool and do something different and, you know, spice things up a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, it was utter frustration because I'm left-handed. And
a left-handed guitar player.
Left-handed guitar player. So, you know, a left-handed guitar is a mirror image of a right-handed guitar. And factories don't like to stop production to turn everything upside down and make it. So back in, like, 1980, if you walked into a guitar store, you wouldn't find one. And you'd have to wait about a year. You'd have to have it ordered, and you have to wait. Or you get lucky and find one, and you're stuck playing that black guitar, that white guitar that has nothing interesting about it. And my thing was I got into weird 60s surf guitars. And there was no way of getting it left-handed unless you're going to make it, pretty much.
So you had to – it was a problem you had to fix for yourself.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how about for you, Matt, then?
To get into
you,
it.
You create and fix amps.
A lot of it came out of the cost of it. When I first started buying, like, vintage old amps and stuff in college when I was playing in bands – you know, you might get an amp for $200, but then it'd be $300 to fix it.
Really?
And I started kind of getting in the hole pretty quickly and just decided I really want to learn to do it on my own and kind of be self-sufficient with it.
Let me go back to you, Chris, because you've been making guitars for, what, 30 years or depending on when you count the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, I was always ripping apart guitars, flipping them over upside down. So I started making guitars in probably 94 range when I really got the guts to make the thing from beginning to end. And Yeah, that's when it really took off. I started to make guitars for the band I was in. I made a left-handed guitar for myself, and I made a matching guitar for the woman who was playing bass. And my wife, Sophie, played drums. And we'd take these things on stage, and we have one here. You can see it. It's the blue and gold one. And it looks like a Jetsons guitar. It looks like a cartoon guitar, basically.
It does look like a cartoon guitar, yes.
It even has a toy built into it. It's a keychain that we won them on the AC Boardwalk. And the laser gun noise is built into it, come out through the amplifier. So we would shoot each other with our guitars and stuff like that. So, yeah.
And why not?
And why not, right, yeah. And people would come up after the shows and they would say, how do I get one of those things? How, you know? And I said, well, I got to make it because I made this. And I was getting orders at shows. And I was like, I'll quit my job if people want me to make guitars for them. Cause
in fact, you brought the very first guitar that you made.
Yes, I did.
You brought
yeah.
it in the studio. Mm-hmm. It's blue. You made it out of, what, floorboards?
Yeah. My dad was laying down an oak floor in the kitchen. And I picked up a piece. And I was like, well, that could be a neck. And this tongue and groove fits. That could be a body, right? And cut it out and used whatever little Craftsman tools we had. And Radio Shack knobs and switches and Home Depot stuff.
It's really cool looking.
Thank you.
I mean, it's something, and yeah, it has a kind of a plastic. We're doing a show and tell with John Ahrens here. He's holding it, a plastic back, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's based on 60s, like I said, 60s guitars made in either Italy or Japan, and they were trying to make guitars that kids would buy.
Ah.
Sparkly and pearly and too many switches. Some of the switches didn't even do anything because they knew that would sell. And that was the guitar I wanted to use on stage. And many people wanted to, too. But it didn't work. It would fall apart on you. So the idea was to take that interesting, crazy-looking thing and make it work so it sounded like a professional instrument.
Well, I love that. You brought three guitars. Can you play one for us?
Yeah, sure. I'll play one of them.
Okay, that's great. This is kind of a salmon-y red color. I would say.
I call it pink sparkle.
Pink yeah. sparkle, okay. I was trying to,
No, and that's the idea of the guitars, too. It's, you're trying to make a statement.
Right.
I'm trying to make a statement. If you play one of these, that's what you're trying to do. There's no getting around that. And well, here's what it sounds like. Great amp, too.
Through a great amazing, amp, right? Yes.
Upside down.
Which we'll
you.
Be talking about. You're playing upside down.
Yeah, in a right-handed world, you got to figure out how you're going to play a guitar. So that's what you just get good at it.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's talk about this. The amp that we just heard. This is something that you created, Matt. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading, there was actually an article about you in the Philadelphia Inquirer, is that your dad, I guess you and your dad kind of together tried to figure out how to make a better amp?
It wasn't.
Or some version of that?
I wouldn't say as much. My dad isn't really as into electronics, but something. He's, let's say, a tinkerer. I kind of grew up around that my whole life, so he's always been trying to tell me to like take things apart and show me how things kind of work, and so that's sort of carried over into it, of sort of like the tweaking that you take to design an amp. You know, taking something, building it, saying this isn't right, going back. And just keep, you know, redoing that for about a year or two.
You make it sound so easy. You just run some wires. But these are tube amps, right?
Yeah, they're tube amps, which adds the kind of the downside is it can be a little dangerous, like tweaking with it. Because, you know, if you've kind of had a long day, you think, I'm going to try this real quick. And you do it and you hooked up 600 volts to your cable that you're going to touch or something. So there's always these sort of like spotty moments with it.
But it sounds like, I mean, you just experimented until you got what it was that you were looking for in terms of that kind of warm sound that you can get from a tube amp.
Yeah, and it's essentially really like what I wanted an amp. Like the amp, I kind of build amps that I've always wanted to have.
Can you just play a little bit more, Chris, just so we mm-hmm. can hear Matt's amp? So that's what you want us to hear, something
that's
like
what
that.
I want it to sound like.
Something like
that's
that.
That's a great sound. Yeah.
It is a great sound. And to you, Ryan, so how did you get into the pedal business, if I can call it that?
So I mentioned I didn't really know much about pedals. I was just playing a bass, and then we got into a band, and there were guitar pedals, and someone said, you can make it. My dad showed me how to make it, too.
Another dad's situation.
Yeah. Showed me how to solder, and then I hit up every musician friend that I had that was still playing in bands, and it kind of just went from there. But it became a love because my wife was – she's fine arts, painting. Well, now we can make something together. And there wasn't a lot of hand-painted stuff at that time. It just became a huge black hole, like didn't want to stop making it. It's a love.
It's a love. But as a bass player, were you looking for a certain kind of sound?
I wanted a dirty sound.
A dirty sound.
I wanted it very fuzzy and dirty. I wanted it to sound broken and big and different than just a clean bass. Yeah.
So how did you know how to do this? I mean, how did you – is it just trial and error, experimenting?
It's a lot – actually, Matt helped me out in the very beginning as I was learning as a true novice. You make a lot of mistakes, a lot, and it still make mistakes. But – you know, when you just keep going and keep working on those things, you get better at it, and then you can start to change the world. You look at these guitars, and you can pick Chris's guitars out anywhere, yeah. You know, and you'll be able to see Matt's, you know, amps all over the place. So, yeah, we wanted to do that too, and create something.
Can you do a little demo for us? Is
sure.
that possible? We have about 2 minutes before our break here.
Okay, so we'll start off with a reverb. And so if we want to get a little extra weird, if we just want to get a little extra weird with it.
This is live radio, folks. Wow. So what was that? I mean, that sort of, I don't even know how to describe it.
It's called oscillation. So it's the signal just repeating back over itself, which gives you that swaying extra noise. And then we can add in some distortion with that. So it's just different textures. So it just adds a little bit more oomph to the amp.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Ryan Rutaisky. He's co-founder, owner of Fuzzrocious Pedals. We just got a little demonstration of what they sound like. He has been manufacturing guitar pedals with his family in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Krista Pinto began designing guitars a number of decades ago, the owner of a music-based instrument shop in Fishtown called DePinto Guitars, and he's been playing one of the guitars that he made. And also with us is Matt Manheyer. He builds and modifies electric guitar amplifiers, owner of Root Beer Audio, also in Fishtown. We'll be talking about that. He teaches at the University of the Arts and the Art Institute. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation. Also, open up the lines at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. And do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen, talking with Krista Pinto, Matt Manheyer, and Ryan Rutaisky about the fact that they have developed some local businesses here in the Delaware Valley specializing in musical equipment, and we've been getting some demonstrations. Before we get back to our conversation, though, I want to play just a clip from the DePinto Twist by the Tennessee surf rock band Los Straitjackets. This is off their 2003 album Supersonic Guitars in 3D. The band apparently is such a fan of the DePinto guitars that they named this song after them. Let's give it a listen. That's a DePinto Twist playing a guitar made by our guest, Chris DePinto. So who were the – how did this Los Straitjackets find you?
Oh, so I started to do the trade shows every year, the NAMM show. That's the big trade show where all the musical instruments are there. All the new stuff is there. And you meet a lot of people that way. And that's pretty much where I started to get my start. It's very expensive to do it.
Really?
I went in another booth. I kind of snuck my way in there. And doing something very different from everybody else, it really was the place to meet the right people. And they were there. They were just dropped by Fender Guitars, which is the biggest company. And I said, I heard them play, and I said, I'll make guitars for you guys in a second. And
really?
Come to my booth.
You like that kind of surfy, that sort of 60s.
The 60s instrumental music.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
It's great. And they do it so amazingly. The perfect little melody. You just heard it right there. It's just, you know. They're pros at it, and they make it fun. They wear these wrestling masks on stage, and the wild personalities, and great musicians. And I said, I want to be a part of that. My guitar's going to be in there. That's what I want to do, you know? And they came and looked at the guitars, and they were like, oh, yeah, of course, yeah. Four
pickups. It works, right?
It works, yeah, yeah. And they've been with me ever since. It's great. We make a low straitjacket model. They were playing it on that recording, and I get calls every time they play a show, you know?
To you, Ryan, I saw a video about your company and also the fact, or it made very clear that from your perspective, this is a family business.
Absolutely.
This is a true mom and pop business.
Yes.
Why is that so important to you?
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, where do you get started in life? Where do you end in life? It's family throughout. I mentioned before with my wife being skilled in fine arts, why not make something with her? If we can make something together, we're already married. We made kids together. Let's make something else together.
Right.
And my dad starting, you know, showing me how to solder and everything. It's just how I was raised. And, you know, I want to be able to work from home and live at home and enjoy my home and enjoy my family. Well, then we can make this stuff together. The kids paint too. So, you know, and it's important for kids to see that your parents are not lazy or, you know, that they have drive and
passion.
Yes. And you guys can do this too. So. Yeah, and why not market that? I mean, these kids are going to grow up. People are going to see them grow up and make mm-hmm. cool things too. So, yeah, it's important. Family's important. It's the beginning and the end
Indeed.
Of everything.
Indeed it is. To you, Matt, now you're in Fishtown, as are you, Chris.
Yes.
And this is a section of Philadelphia that has, I guess, undergone a pretty dramatic transformation, certainly when I used to work there in the 1970s. So why Fishtown, Matt?
I used to live actually in Francisville. Or, you know, over near the Fairmount area. And I was working out of my house. And, you know, almost, I'd say at that point, even like 80, it felt like 80% of everyone that's coming to my house was coming from Fishtown. And I needed to move. You know, my rent was up. And I was looking to get a large space over sort of near there anyway. And I just kind of ended up over there. And it's been, I mean, a lot of venues are over there. Most musicians that come to my house go, I can't believe you're right here. Like, I live literally, you know, three doors down. Or I live down the block. Or I walked my amp here. So.
Do you feel like you're part of the sort of indie music scene in Philly?
Yeah.
Is there one?
Yeah, there's definitely. It feels, you know, small enough to have a grasp on it to, like, recognize faces. Large enough that, you know, you see bands you know, on, like, The Tonight Show or stuff like that. Yeah, it seems like everyone sort of knows each other somewhat. And, you know, even just how I know these guys, like, such a small coincidental way, even with, like, Ryan and all these things. So, yeah.
It's an exciting time for that neighborhood.
This is Chris, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. War on Drugs is on late night shows all the time. Kurt Vile is getting huge. Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah. Man. These are big bands in the neighborhood, and it's pretty exciting for Philly. This never happened before. You know? Well, it has happened.
It has happened, but now it's happening again.
It's happening again. It's exciting, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, you were in Old City for a while,
when
that was, I guess, sort of not as upscale as it is now.
Yeah, I mean, we started there in 95. We got a little storefront, and yeah, you didn't want to hang out in Old City late at night, you know? I mean, it was before they had redone all the streets, and the sidewalks were scary, and everything was a little scary. But that's where the musicians were, and that's what we're seeing in Fishtown. And it happened to us when we moved north. We moved to Northern Liberties as well. You know, you go there because it's cheap, and the musicians are there, and the artists are there. And that's the only way you can survive, because you don't have a lot of money to do this, but you have your passion. And that's really what keeps it alive. So when we were in Old City, we opened up our store there. And, yeah, it was an exciting time for Philadelphia, I think so.
You picked up another one of your guitars that you brought in. Describe this for our listeners.
Yeah, okay. So this one is completely encased in blue pearl from the front and the back. And there's a gold tinsel pick guard, I guess. There's tinsel down inside that plastic there. The whole fretboard is white pearl.
Wow. And, are we talking real pearl?
No, no, it's plastic. It's
plastic.
Acrylic. It's all
gotcha.
Done with acrylic, and so this is really the Italian way of making a guitar in the 60s. This, you know, more pearl and more sparkle, and now hidden underneath there is a really nicely made pickup. Even though it looks like a toy underneath the pickup is basically the microphone that picks up the
right.
string.
Right.
To make it look as cheap as possible, but to hide a great sounding pickup under there is what I'm trying to do. And a pearl fretboard is usually known for being a cheap type of fretboard material. But if you do it right, it's perfect, you know. So that's what I tried to do. I tried to make it look cheap. But when you pick it up, you fall in love with it.
Meaning cheap, like affordable cheap?
Well, that's what they were. They were cheap instruments. The pearly guitars were cheap. They fell apart. And a lot of people look at my stuff and they – actually, I was pretty scoffed. I was laughed at when I first started doing this. And it took a long time for people to pick it up and try it.
Well, can you play a little something for us? And then
Ryan,
we'll demo some more of your pedals, and then we've got callers. We've got all sorts of people that want to join the conversation.
So here's a little fuzz on top of that.
Yep.
And then a whole different type of fuzz. And then some light overdrive distortion.
Great. You have names for your pedals, right?
Yes.
So you should name them for us.
Today we brought with us the Demon. That was one of the first things that we heard. It can do some distortion, but it can also do some light overdrive as well. And we heard some of that fuzz. So you got like a 3-in-1. There's the Rat Tail, which is that was the last piece that we just played there. So that can do some distortion, but also can do some of that lighter overdrive. And the fuzz is the Gray Stash. That was the first pedal actually that Matt helped me show my dummy mistakes with, again, vintagey sounds. And then the last one is the Afterlife Reverb, which has a really cool sugar skull. We do hand painting and all that stuff too on there. So again,
and when someone is playing, they're standing and they're I mean, it's a pedal, so they're using their foot to change the reverb or whatever.
Yeah, you can turn it on and off. They can use their feet to make it louder or change settings on the fly. We also add like second foot switches so you can do something extra with it.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
That's one of our pieces. There has to be something more so people actually want to use it and can use it for more than one use.
And Matt, you've made pedals as well, right?
Mostly for myself. Probably mostly in classes with students, actually. I don't know how many classes right now. I guess I'll have 3 classes building this one pedal this coming up semester. So I have so many of them in my house. You know, I give them to friends pretty much as like stocking stuffers at this point. But
good to be your friend, I guess, right? I saw your class schedule for spring, Audio Electronics 1 and 2, Introduction to Circuit Bending and Introduction to Pro Tools.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are sort of the sort of basics for amp designing, making?
Mostly more, you know, just teaching people how to, like, be able to repair their own things, like their own cables. If you're a musician or you're recording, you know, it's just cables are so expensive and you end up breaking them so easily. I know when I was in high school, I'd pretty much buy new cables, like, every month or two, it felt like. So it's mostly, like, teaching people that and how to kind of, like, you know, make sense of their equipment and hopefully start to build some stuff, yeah.
Well, let me reintroduce the three of you, and then I do want to get some callers, and we've got some email comments as well. And that's Matt Manheyer, local builder, modifier of electric guitar amplifiers. His company is called Root Beer Audio, and it's located in the Fishtown section of Philadelphia. Also, he's senior lecturer at the University of the Arts and a teacher at the Art Institute of Philadelphia. Ryan Rutaisky is co-founder, owner of Fuzzrocious Pedals. We've been getting some demos of that. It's a boutique guitar pedal manufacturer based in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. And also with us, Chris DePinto. He's a guitar designer for DePinto Guitars and the owner of the Fishtown-based musical instrument shop called DePinto Guitars. And to join our conversation, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. You can also join us by sending us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Let me get Kyle from Hatboro to join us. Hi, Kyle. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks, Marty.
Sure.
As a local musician and somebody likes to tinker with my gear and all that, I was wondering if either one of you had any advice for somebody trying to get into the boutique instrument or gear business. I could take my answer off the air.
Fair enough. And I'm sure a lot of people, I don't know. I'm going to toss that first to you, Chris, because you've been, I guess, doing this a little bit longer than others.
Yeah. Just keep trying to do what you love, and don't let anyone tell you that, you know, that's too hard to do. Take apart things that you have. You're going to have to buy stuff, and you're going to have to break it, and you're going to have to figure out how it works. And you're going to try and copy those things. I don't know whether he's going to try and make pedals or guitars, right. But I pulled apart guitars, and I ruined some of my old guitars.
Did you?
But you can find them again. You can buy another one, you know. And so that's what you learn. You ruin it, but you learn about it, you know, and that's how you got to do it. And you got to keep going. And don't expect someone to teach it to you. You got to learn on your own.
You got to learn it yourself.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that, Ryan?
Oh, absolutely. On top of that, though, you need that whole not give up piece. There's going to be some really frustrating times, especially just trying to get your name out there, your brand out there. It's not easy, but if you continue to do it and you follow that passion, then whatever's in your gut, and just keep following that and listen to the people around you, you can get there.
Do you mean need a lot of money?
No, I'd say, like Chris
said, it helps, right?
It definitely would help. I'd say just like you're going to break your own stuff. Try to work on your own stuff before you break other people's stuff. And just keep trying at it. I feel like I've reread the same books the past 8 years. You know, I just am like, I read it once, I get a little bit, I read it again in a year later, and I get a little more out of it. And just kind of keep trying to just understand it as much as you can.
We've been using the amp that you brought in. Can you describe that for our listeners?
What that is, it's a 40-watt, which is kind of mid-size, relatively larger guitar amp, a combo amp, so it has a speaker built in. And it's based off what's known as a Fender Blackface Vibe Reverb, which is a really like coveted time of guitar amps from like the 60s. Known for like kind of like Chris's stuff, like kind of like a lot of surf tones, kind of a clean. And what I've kind of, I guess, said is I kind of feel like it's almost like the Philly sound to me, because as doing amp repair here, like, you know, 8 out of 10 people have an amp kind of similar to that.
Oh, interesting.
Like maybe a more modern or cheaper version or this, but really they come down to some like kind of version of that in my experience.
So there's a Philly sound. I mean, we talk about the orchestra having a Philadelphia sound. Chris, sure. There's a Philly sound.
Yeah, and just from selling the instruments, there's a lot of there's a big Motown sound here in Philadelphia, and we get those instruments coming back in because they're sitting around in houses, you know, like Ampegs, flip-top Ampegs that were used for the bass, and I can't believe how many do come in, and there's definitely a Philly sound, and I don't care what generation you're talking about, it keeps going through the players.
Let me get to, looks like Steve from Northern Liberties to join us in Radio Times. Hi, Steve, go ahead, you're on the air.
Hi, I want to make a point. I work for one of these big box retailers, and guys like Chris are starting to take a little bit of our business, and I have no control over it. My corporation makes me shoot a shotgun at every customer in the world and try and see what grabs and chase them in by the lower prices, and they're starting to go away and find people that can really target what they want and build something for them and spend some time with them. And I don't know if these guys know what kind of effect they're starting to have on them.
And you work at one of those box stores that's here in the Delaware Valley?
Sure do. Wish I worked for Chris. He's really making a headway with what he's doing. I see his guitars come in all the time.
Interesting. Well, Chris, well, all in your court there.
Yeah, there's a different model that we've designed, and maybe it was just done on accident, but I don't like the big box places. I never liked going in there. It's a sterile environment, and they don't have the interesting things that I'm looking for. And so when I and they're actually really not that nice to you either. Sorry, but
really?
I mean that. But that's the old school model of the guitar store. They, you know, it's like a pizza place. You know, I'm not going to talk that much. But you know,
we hear you.
When you walk into a place, they act like you should be thanking them for being there. You know, and take what you're given. You know, and when you walk into our store, you know, you're greeted, and you're, you know. We help you get what you want, and if we don't even have it, we'll tell you where to go to get it, you know. So it's a soft sell, but it's what we do, and we're doing it because we love it, not because we're trying to make a profit or even – well, we're trying to make a profit, but we're trying not to make a profit for shareholders. I think that's where the scary thing comes in for people trying to sell instruments every day and hit a quota, you know.
I mean, Ryan, so much is about customer service today. I mean, because it's competitive. People can go anywhere to get what they want. They want to be treated nicely.
Oh, absolutely. Just being nice from the start and being nice all the way through, even to the customer who's not happy with you, that can change everything. You have to feel comfortable that the people that you're going, like Chris said, you may walk into some big box store and you don't feel truly comforted, but you could walk into Chris's shop and get greeted when you come in and not a stock greeting, and you know they'll let you go in and peruse and not be on top of you. But on top of that, like you said, if you're just nice to people,
mm-hmm.
things come back to you in a good way, or they can talk nice about other people to you. You know, hey, I went to Fuzz Roches,
right?
and they were really nice, and you know they answered my email right away, not by a robot or 6 months later or not at all.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Ryan Rutaisky, with Matt Manheyer, and Chris DePinto. We'll probably play some more music as well and get some more callers in at 1-888-477-9499. Again, send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at Marty Moscow. And we do want to hear from the musicians in our audience. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with Matt Manheyer. He's a local builder modifier of electric guitar amplifiers. His company is called Root Beer Audio. Also with us is Chris DePinto. He's a guitar designer for DePinto Guitars, owner of the instrument shop known as DePinto Guitars in the Fishtown section of Philadelphia. And Ryan Rutaisky is a co-founder owner of Fuzz Roches Pedals, a boutique guitar pedal manufacturer based in New Jersey. And I do want to play just one more piece of music. This is Keep Your Eyes Peeled by Queens of the Stone Age from their 2013 album Like Clockwork. The guitar uses a custom model Demon, and that's a ferocious pedal made by our guest today, Ryan Rutaisky. Let's give it a listen. Keep Your Eyes Peeled by Queens of the Stone Age, and the guitar in that using a custom model Demon made by our guest here. So when you listen to that, Ryan, what do you hear?
That's pure excitement for
me. Is it?
Yeah, I mean, I can pick out our Demon and the special modification that they wanted. being the first track on an album, and you put that in, and there we are. Like, that's us. It's a dark, you know, we make some dark pedals, and that's a really dark sound that you have there. Indeed. So, yeah, but exciting is the overwhelming feeling with that.
We have an email from Bernie says, you miss an obvious opportunity to tell non-electronics listeners what is a tube amp. What is a tube amp in this context? Why is a tube amp better than a transistor amp? Why is there such controversy about this? Matt, that's in your corner.
that's a pretty common argument. I'd say to guitar players and musicians, tube amps would probably be agreed upon as a better than transistor amps. Tube amps, when we go into it, would be the older technology. Transistors really came about a little more in the 70s, and then by the 80s, they kind of replaced most tubes and everything. The main difference is tubes is how they distort. When you turn up an amp, which we can't, you know, here in the studio right now, but if you crank up my amp, it'll respond very differently than if you crank up a modern solid state or transistor amp. It's a softer, what they call a compression. The notes sort of like, they sort of like bloom a little bit. There are all these like very subtle things that kind of ridiculous terms for it, but the difference is definitely there as a musician.
And if we're talking about amps, tubes rather, do you make the tubes or do you buy the tube? I think of tubes, I think of, you know, pretty sizable tubes.
No, I buy them. People are always really surprised they're still being made, and it's actually a really fast-growing industry because of it's, you know, there used to be so many different types of tubes for TVs and everything, and now it's really like, you know, off the top of my head, let's say there's 25 common tubes or even probably less that are really common, and they're now being made more and more. Not really in the U.S. anymore, mostly like China and Eastern Europe and stuff like that. But
people want that sound, that sound that you get from a tube. Let me see what Tony from, looks like Atlantic City, has to say. Tony, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, guys.
Hi there.
Hey, Marty. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I'm a bass player. I got over 30 years, you know, plucking strings. And like what you guys were saying about the box stores, usually when I go in there, I meet guys who are younger than me, and they really don't know what they're talking about. So it's kind of frustrating. But, I had a question.
Sure.
Do you guys, this is to you, the guy that does that builds the guitars. Do you do like basses, or do you do like bass heads or bass amps? Because I'm looking to get something custom for what I do.
Tony, let me give Chris DePinto a chance to respond.
Yeah. We make a few basses. Actually, each model that we make, the Galaxy, the Belvedere, and the Mach 4, there's a bass version of each one. And I've made a basses for some pretty famous people. I made a bass for Jamal Dean Takuma, who's a local Philly guy who played with Ornette Coleman. And he's been touring with it for years. And and a lot of bass players do like the bass. Yeah.
And you're a bass player,
okay.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Tony, for calling in. You're a bass player.
Yeah, and we make sure that all of our pedals are bass-friendly and guitar-friendly, like at an equal stance. So you won't see that with some other guitar pedals. They'll cut your frequencies and you won't feel your bass. So we make sure that that's still in there, too.
And it's important to feel the bass, right? I mean, that's one of the purposes of the bass, isn't
it? And we make them loud so you can hear it and so you can really make your guitar players mad. Yeah.
Let me see what Jack from Devon has to say. Hi, Jack. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. I guess this question is for Ryan. Thank you. My name is – I play an electric guitar, and I've always wondered, what is the difference between distortion – and overdrive. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Go ahead. You have a funny look on your face, Ryan.
It's such a thin line.
Is it?
It's typically what you see now in a lot of overdrives is it's just a tamed down distortion. So there's a lot of different technical ways that you can get a distortion, or you can use resistors and capacitors to just tame that down and make it an overdrive. Mm. But I think it's something we can definitely talk about, you know, through email or anything. It's a very long conversation, because then you get into fuzz and everything too. Right. It's about waveforms and how much your output is and how much things are distorting or not distorting. So,
but people are using these words,
this is Chris,
to explain a sound. I think you said overdrive is the first level, then distortion would be the next level, and then the fuzz would be the out of control last level of wild sound. Yeah,
you want to add to that, Matt?
I'd say overdrive probably stems from overdriven amps, you know, back in the day, which is how you kind of got distortion before fuzz, you know, boxes that did this on purpose, pedals that did this. I would agree with these guys that kind of usually, I think they're probably used incorrectly a lot of times. It's like marketing, mm-hmm. I'm sure, you know, you could, like you said, really break down what is overdrive and what's distortion. But I think it's usually just overdrive's the tamer brother of distortion and so on.
We have a long email from M.A. As a guitarist, I have owned and still own fine vintage tube amps, including a Marshall 100-watt stack circa 1972, a Blackface Fender amp circa 1960s. You know what I'm talking about. I now find myself leaving the heavy tube amps at home and using mostly smaller digital modeling amps that are reliable, hassle-free, and provide huge sounds that are as warm and articulate or fuzzy as I need to be. I'd like to hear your comments on my contention that a lot of the hype around these so-called vintage tube amps is simply folklore. My belief is that your sound is 95% in your hands. Matt.
Oh, yeah, that's a rough one. there are a lot of different ways to look at that argument. There's even, you know, you said earlier vinyl. I mean, the whole argument, like, does vinyl sound better? That could be a whole conversation. But in my opinion, it really comes down to people just like it. It's like it's more fun. It's about the experience. Whether it sounds better, you know, that's kind of up to you.
Mm-hmm.
I would argue tube amps do sound better. I'm not usually a fan of modeling amps. I always have, like, students and people ask me my opinion on it. I'm like, I'm the wrong guy to ask. But there's just something about, without sounding corny, like how organic it is to turn up an amp and you don't know what it's going to do from day to day a little bit. Like, getting the sound, just turning it up and getting it till you like it, and that's just it. And it works for that moment. It might work for that stage, that room. Whereas a modeler, like, you throw on, like, heavy rock setting number two, it doesn't really, I don't know, you don't get the
give
same
you
feeling.
The kind of that yeah. same, yeah, go ahead,
yeah,
Chris.
Yeah, they're getting very close, and I'll agree that you can get almost the identical sound, but there's another level here that, you know, this is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. What it looks like. I mean, people listen with their eyes. I don't care what you say. I want that amp on stage because that looks awesome.
I like the way it looks.
I like the way it looks. I like the way it makes me feel when I play. When I'm home looking at it, I play a different way. When I see those tubes light up, I play a different way. It's got to do with the creativity. It has to do with the organic. It has to do with the electricity in the air, too. I don't care, but that modeling amp is not going to hit me at a gut level.
Ryan, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, I've gone to concerts either side stage or in the crowd and seen it from both sides, whether people are using like the Axe FX amp, those big amp modelers, or Kemper, or these other big things. And when you're standing side stage and you really can't hear anything on the stage, that would drive me nuts.
Yeah.
I want to hear that big sound behind me. If I'm up there playing, or if I'm out in the crowd, I'm looking at their amps. I want to see what they're playing. Most of the musicians that I know that are touring, they want to have that amp with them. Maybe we're all wrong. Maybe it's a crutch. But man, does it feel good to turn up? Does it look good? Am I gonna, like I said, between which room I'm playing and or in my house, you want to have that thing in front of you. It's yours.
Ooh. Let me get to Gerald from, I think, Springfield to join our conversation. Hi, Gerald. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hey, Marnie.
Hi there.
Love your show. Been
Thank
a long
you.
Time listener.
Great.
And I just want to commend your guests on what they're doing for the local music community and also being kind of the Davids against all the Goliaths there. I'm a longtime musician myself. And I just want to ask your guests what the biggest challenge is trying to break through into the larger marketplace. So is that something they're even interested in, or do they – you know, really enjoy being kind of the David against Goliath.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, interesting way to put it, Gerald. Let me give Chris a first crack at that.
I think I'm probably the veteran here, and yeah. I've been down that road. And it's daunting. If you don't have the money, one thing you're going to do is you're going to watch people take what you've done, and with their big bank account, they're going to do it bigger. And instrument makers that were my customers who are now making instruments like mine, and people say, hey, your guitar looks like that company. I was like, that guy was buying my guitars at one time, you know? But
right.
With more money, I am now considered the one who's copying him, and it's just really hard. And you gotta have artists. That's the main thing. Artists have to like your stuff, and they got to use it because that's important for people to find out about your stuff. And it's a cheap way to do it. You may give them a guitar. You may give them a pedal. But people will find out about it if you do it that way. And it's just too expensive to run the ads. They'll crush you.
You're getting a big nod there from Ryan. Yes?
Yeah. Chris mentioned NAMM. Up until
you got to define NAMM first.
NAMM is the biggest thing in the U.S. for people who build guitars and amps and pedals. And you know, for musicians and buyers, and it's a big networking thing.
The trade show, yeah.
Thousands of dollars.
Oh, to get in the door,
just for a 10x10 booth. We were going to do something like that this year, and you know, we dropped out at the last minute and decided we need to focus on just being the family, being in house, and we don't pay for ads. We don't do like, let's see how far you can get by word of mouth.
Huh.
Wow. Someone's going to pick up that guitar, and they're going to tell someone else, or someone else is going to see that. So you can make it that way.
Matt, does making amps make you a better musician, do you think?
I feel like ever since I've gotten really into the technical side of stuff, I really enjoy being able to really like understand what I'm doing and really know how to find weird sounds. Like even I don't really build pedals. Like I said, I build them for myself. But even last night, I got a tape delay in the mail, which is like this old it's just my favorite piece of music equipment. And understanding how to kind of distort it and how to like mess with it with some other things I've built. So I kind of like just having full control over every sound, I guess.
And when you were 5 years old, were you just taking apart everything in the house?
I was always hooking up speaker systems and seeing how many speakers I could get hooked up to the stereo.
Oh, is that right? And how many, what was your...
I used to have like a wall of these thrift store speakers. None of it probably worked, just to listen to, you know, Blink-182 or whatever I was listening to, but...
Chris, you're a really good guitar player because you've been playing during the hour.
Oh, so thank you. Thank
you have a band now?
Yeah, I have a band. Yeah, exactly. Cream Circus is the name of the band, and we play these guitars so you can hear them. And I just released the record, actually, and it shows off the guitars and the music that I've been creating over all the years. And the band has the same sort of thing where it's a shocking look with a sound that is different from what you're expecting.
And do you have time to play your bass?
Right? I wish I did.
Yeah, I mean, you got this, the family and
yeah, pedals has
business.
Taken over everything. So I do get to dabble here and there, and last year I was playing a lot more of them. But yeah, my focus right now is just making sure I can make some cool pedals for people.
And is this something you do every day? I mean, do you have a work schedule? When you work at home, you know, it's easy to get distracted by stuff.
Yeah. Before the kids are up, I'm working. On my lunch break for my main job, I'm working. After school, I'm working. In the evening, we sit in front of the TV and we're building stuff in front of that. So it never stops. It's more than 40 hours a week.
How about for you, Chris?
Yeah. Well, I do repairs and I do, I teach guitar. I sell guitars, I trade, you know, anything, because you have to diversify. You're not going to stay in business these days. So many music stores have gone out of business. And the big stores in this area, which were Zaz Music, 8th Street Music, Senioli's now is gone. I mean, these were the stores I grew up going to, and they can't make it anymore. And like I said, it's the big box chains that came in, and you lose that local touch, you know. They were buying certain instruments to tailor to the people who are playing in the area, and that's not how the big places do it.
Yeah. Final word from you, Matt.
Just on like kind of the schedule and everything. Yeah, it's kind of I sort of work on my stuff around teaching. It works out nicely because when I'm not teaching in the summers, I'm at my house and my shop's in my house, and I'm there, you know, 5 days a week. And then, like, right, I start school actually today. So it'll slow down a little bit, just a little bit, you know, but it'll be a little harder, but. It's like you said, like diversify. It's kind of nice. Like when I'm, you know, I don't have classes, I can be doing this stuff.
Well, thank you, all three of you, for joining us today on Radio Time. It's been really interesting to learn how you do what you do. So thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Matt Manheyer, the voice you just heard, local builder, modifier of electric guitar amplifiers. His company called Root Beer Audio in Fishtown. Chris DePinto is the founder, owner of the Fishtown-based musical instrument shop, DePinto Guitars. He designs guitars for his shop. And Ryan Rutaisky is co-founder, owner of Fuzzrocious Pedals. And that's a boutique guitar pedal manufacturer based in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program. Kevin Griffin and Al Banks, the engineers for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us.